Hello and welcome to Simply Reds. My name is Zain Khan. I'm your illustrious host. Weekly, I'm joined by my regular panelist, who is Mutsuba. Normally, we're also joined by Mittal. Mittal said something about trying to give some Far East businessmen advice on how to get around rules about third-party ownership of players or something. He's going on about something. And he said something, he whispered, ushered as he went off into the sunset, something about, if Big Sam can do it, then so can I. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. But yeah, he's off giving advice to some businessmen, whatever that is. Anyway, so we're back. It's been a little while. Much. Why have we been away? What's been going on?
I don't know why you've been away.
I sense a little bit of BS, so let me enlighten the viewers a little bit. Very much like Manchester United and Jose Mourinho, some would say a marriage made in heaven. Very, very similar to some life events going on with yourselves. That's the reason that we've been off. So Mushrooba was off getting married. As with Jose Mourinho and Manchester United, the honeymoon is very much over, as it is for you. Got a packed show, so let's crack on. There's a lot of stuff been going on since we've been away. In fact, I think the last time that we spoke, we were getting all so excited about Pogba joining us, and he's gone and done exactly that. So I don't want to dwell too much on this, given the fact that we're well into the meat of the season. But he did sign for a massive amount, and I think this is we're going to talk a little bit later on about his performance. So it's good to frame that conversation. So Paul Pogba signed for $89 million. He's on a roughly sort of I think it's a 5-year deal with an option to extend a year beyond that. Mustafa, is this a bad long-term move for United? As a club, we already pay a hefty premium for players.
Yeah, I think so. I think the whole world knows now that, you know, every time United want to sign anyone, it's going to be inflated. We're going to have to pay over the odds. But you know what? We've got the money. Let's splash it. Okay. In regards to Pogba himself, yeah, it's a bit embarrassing, the $89 million. But, you know, like I said, it's our money, we can spend it as we like. I know, you know, there's been a lot of figures being thrown around social media and whatnot when we did sign Pogba. And one of the interesting ones was similar to, in terms of, you know, revenue, he was like a small percentage of our revenue. It's similar to West Brom signing someone for $15 million, say. So, you know, in the long term, you know, it's a bargain for us. And more importantly, you know, he's come home. He's absolutely delighted to be here. That's what I'm really happy to see. I mean, a couple of seasons ago, we signed, you know, Falcao, we signed Di Maria for huge fees. And, you know, they sort of came for the money. They didn't really appreciate, understand or love the club. But with Pogba, he absolutely loves it. He's breathing, he's living and breathing the football club. He's delighted to be here. You know, he's giving hugs to the tea ladies, the kitchen staff,
did he
everyone.
Actually? Hugs to the team.
Yeah,
lady.
He was. Yeah. They were all delighted. Same as he said himself, you know, he goes, I'm back home.
But I think I agree with you a little bit as well. You sort of said this is the way football's going. And I guess with bigger and bigger TV deals, it kind of just means this is going to happen.
Yeah, Pogba even more so. I mean, you know, before he joined us, like in the Euros as well, he was Adidas's poster boy.
Yeah.
He was the front, you know, poster boy on the ads, all over social media, doing his dances, doing his dabs. He's a huge commercial giant. He's a forefront of Adidas, right? Even more so than Messi.
So do you think is what also means that we have to pay more for the player if they got
absolutely.
That image around them?
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And I think Adidas would have been delighted with the move, you know, with us being sponsored by Adidas themselves. You know, yeah. They would have made a bit of money themselves from it. And we will as well, ongoing.
Fans out there will be very interested to hear that. You look at some of the statistics around shirt sales. In fact, even before Pogba even signed, we were out at the Wembley Charity Shield game, and one of the kids had a Pogba shirt on.
Yeah, he did.
We were absolutely stunned. The stats that I've got to hand here, anyway, within the first 3 weeks, 190 million worth of Pogba merchandise, primarily shirts, were sold.
Wow.
You look at 190 million, you think, well, we paid sort of 90 odd million for him. He's paid back for himself within, 3 weeks, hasn't he? Not really. Mm. I dug a little bit deeper, and it's true for all major clubs. We only get sort of 10 to 15%, 15% if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll let you guys do the number crunching, but it'll take a little while before shirt sales pay back for Pogba. But anyway, let's move on. We've got a lot to talk through. So things started so well for us. Jose's first piece of silverware came thick and fast. It was at Wembley, and it's the game that we were just sort of alluding to. It was against the champions, Leicester. And I guess for some people, that pretty much is a Mickey Mouse Cup. Well, I guess if you win it, it's the best thing to sliced bread. If you're the loser in that cup, or you're not even in that charity shield, then it's just seen as a bit of a Mickey Mouse Cup. With regards to that actual game, we were there. Just your views on that game?
Yeah, like you said, you know, not a lot of teams take it seriously, and you could see that in both teams as well. It was a bit on and off, wasn't it? The crowd was quite. I was quite surprised to see the crowd being quiet. I think that was mainly due to the fact that me and you were actually in the Leicester end. But
yeah, we were in the. We actually. So I had the United shirt on, and you backed out. You absolute wuss. So before we went, I said, "Get your shirt on. It doesn't matter what end we're sitting in. We're gonna be there for the lads." And you just pretty much pussied out, didn't you? But let's not dwell too much on that. On your sort of misgivings. Yeah, it was the start of the season. There's buzz all around Wembley, and I think generally all around the football world as well. You know, the season's getting started, and you get that kind of tingling feeling, that anticipation of something good's about to happen.
Oh, I definitely got the tingling feeling when Lingard scored. What a goal!
Yeah, it was phenomenal, wasn't it? To be honest, I thought it was Martial.
Yeah, same here. It's only until I saw the dab I realised who it was.
Yeah. First competitive game within the Premier League was a routine victory, I would say, over Bournemouth. Things started so well. Matter popping up just as we thought he was about to be ousted, and he was on the way out. This kind of leads onto a little bit of a conversation, a little bit of a discussion point. There's a bit of friction, whether it's real or whether it's just perceived, between Mata and Jose Mourinho. But speaking of players not in Jose's good books, you've also got the likes of Bastian Schweinsteiger, and there's a massive kind of story going on in the background with him as well. Is this another kind of Victor Valdez and Louis van Gaal story all over again? You see similar sorts of things, not just within our club as well, but you've got Manchester City, Pep's also getting rid of Yaya Toure and Joe Hart. So is this just modern management? Is this justified given the fact that players get paid enough? Is Jose doing the right thing here? Probably the first thing where I think, personally anyway, I'm seeing something I don't think sits well with me.
It doesn't sit well with me either. But I think the issue here is we don't know what's happened. Obviously, there is something that's happened. You spoke about Valdez and Yaya Toure at City. Those two players spoke out against the regime, spoke out against the manager, the agent spoke out. So, you know, there was that excuse, you know, because that was the reason why they've been expelled. But with Schweinsteiger, you know, we've heard nothing. And he's been, you know, relegated to the reserve side, training with the under-21s. And he's such a nice chap as well. Are you telling me that Schweinsteiger's not good enough to play for United and Fellaini is? Schweinsteiger's not good enough. No, it's serious. And Rojo is, and they're playing, they're starting for United, and Schweinsteiger isn't. So I'm not sure. Obviously, there is obviously something that's happened, and I really want to know what's happened, because I would love to see Bastian in the side. He can really give us something. I mean, the role Herrera's playing at the moment, Schweinsteiger would be absolutely superb in that role. You know, it's just, you know, Mourinho's not that bad that, you know, he just doesn't like the look on someone's face and he'll expel them.
But then what about Mata? Has something happened with Mata as well? It seems to be a little bit of a theme. One or two players, he clearly just takes a disliking to them. I think with Mata, it's slightly different given the fact that United paid a hefty fee and there's probably a bit of pressure from the upper echelons of the United hierarchy to utilise Mata and not just offload. Clearly we're saying something's going on with Bastian. We don't know the whole story. What about Mata?
Yeah, I think Mata is just all the media talk, really. I was nervous when Mourinho first came to the club, to be honest, because I really love Mata, and I think he gave a lot to the side. And I think just Mourinho just put it to bed last week, actually, when he came out and said that he didn't actually get rid of Mata at Chelsea, and the Mata at Chelsea didn't really suit the system or the football he played, hence why he didn't start. But Mata's become an important player for United because of the football he wants to play. And, you know, that's great news for me and for all of United, because, you know, he's such a great player. And now we're seeing him playing in that number 10 position. That's his position. And if you play him there, he will perform. And we've seen that in the past couple of games.
Definitely. I think what didn't help the cause just on the Bastian Schweinsteiger stories is brother, I think, came out in the press, but it was more Twitter, where he released a comment personally aggrieved that a person of Bastian's footballing prowess was being made to train with the under-21s or something along those lines. Bastian, of course, never said anything himself until a couple of weeks down the line, whereby he released a message to the fans thanking them for their continuous support and said he's ready for the team, he's ready to come in whatever capacity United need him, and he's you know, he wants United to be his final club, the one that he signs off from. And I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Speaks volumes.
Yeah, he's such a great professional. Yeah, he's such a great professional, isn't it? Which makes it even worse. And to think, you know, he'd really speak out and do something unprofessional. It's just not Bastian, is it?
I think he reminds me a little bit of Berbatov. I think Berbatov under Ferguson, he was not favoured that much, and we took the likes of Owen to a Champions League final and left the top scorer, Dimitar Berbatov, at home. I think that was utterly disgraceful, but you never heard a word of negativity come out from that boy's mouth. Next game was at home. It could have been a tricky fixture. It was Southampton. Zlatan bagged 2 goals on his home debut, and that was sort of 3 for the season. So let's start off with Zlatan. What do we make of him? And do you think he's found it easier or harder than he thought he would?
I think he's found it very easy. He's tucked in so nicely. He's turning to the Premier League like a duck to water. You know, he's just dropped right in. You can see he's so experienced. He's been there. He's done that. And obviously, he's got his goals as well. He scored in pre-season against Galatasaray in his first game. He scored against Leicester in the Community Shield. Then he followed up with goals against Bournemouth and Southampton as well. And, you know, he's brought that fear back, which we spoke about in a previous podcast, where defenders are now looking at the team sheet and thinking, oh no, Zlatan's there.
To be honest, I don't think he's found it as easy as he thought it would be. I think there is a physical side to the Premier League, and sometimes I've seen him a couple of times just being hurried, harassed a little bit and being bullied off the ball. Nothing to alarm. There is certainly something there. I think if you went to Zlatan and you asked him, what are the things that you didn't expect from the Premier League? He'll say that physicality. He would have said, I would have been aware of it, but I didn't think that it would be, you know, this, it would impact his football that much. But apart from that, I can't really argue with regards to Zlatan's performances. So the third game saw us taking 90 minutes to break down Hull, and it finally took just a young little whippersnapper, that is Marcus Rashford, showing Jose Mourinho that he's not someone that Jose should be keeping on the bench. So where does Marcus Rashford fit into the grand scheme of things? Where do we see his season progressing from here? Is he someone that should be kind of this super substitute that comes on, or should he be starting? We don't want him to end up like another Adnan Yanez like.
Yeah, I think Marcus has got a huge role to play this season. Mourinho's come out and said that as well recently, and he needed that goal. It was his first minutes of the season, and he got such an important goal for us. And, you know, we've seen in the recent games as well, he's bagged a few more goals. But, you know, when he first came to the side last season, to be honest, I did think he was another Makeda.
Yeah,
only until I saw him play out wide, you know, I realised how good he is with the ball and what a talented player he actually is. And, you know, again, we've seen in the recent games, he's gone to the right, he's gone to the left, and he looks equally as threatening. He's always got a goal in him. He's got a natural finisher, and I'm really excited about him. And I think, you know, the England fans as well are excited about him. And Mourinho knows he's got a player on his hands, and I know he will utilise him this season. He will be such an important player for us. I wouldn't put too much pressure on him right now, to be honest. I wouldn't be starting him every game. Zlatan is still the main man, and we all know that Zlatan won't, you know, be at the club for such a long time, given his age. So Rashford knows, you know, he can take everything he can from Zlatan, and in a few years he could be our main man.
So fourth game, Manchester City. What a big game to have at the start of the season as well. Just the game itself ended 2-1. All manner of headlines coming off the back of that game, saying how we got outplayed and how things just pretty much went tits up. I don't think we were truly outplayed and all that sort of stuff is that valid. I think within the first half we certainly were kind of on the back foot. I think in the second half we did much better. Your take on the Manchester City game?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It was just that first 20 minutes where City were superb, actually. De Bruyne and Silva absolutely controlled it. But after that we got a goal and it looked like, you know, we would equalise and take the game to City. We had a great second half, but we just lacked that cutting edge. You know, this season we'll play a lot worse than that and still win games. So I think there were still a lot of positives from that game, but, you know, given that it was City, it was really disappointing that we actually lost.
Well, yeah, you're right. It was the fact that it was City. That's what makes it that much more bitter. So looking at that City game, what do we think actually went wrong within that game? If we're trying to break it apart, look at it analytically, say, how can we fix things?
It was just Man City's ruthlessness. That first 20 minutes, they had a couple of chances. They put them away. We did well to get our goal back, and I think Zlatan had a really good chance towards the end of the first half. If that went in, it could have been a totally different game. We're still creating chances. That's really good to see. You know, I mean, last season we just didn't create anything. But this season we're creating a lot of chances, but we're not taking them at the moment. I think that's really disappointing. But if we keep playing like we are, you know, we're in a good position, and I think we just need to be more damaging in front of goal. We've got the players, we've got Martial, Zlatan, Rashford, Rooney. They've got the quality, they've got the experience. We just need to be more, have a bit more of a killer touch in front of goal.
I managed to scribble down a few notes about where I think things went wrong, just to share with our audience. So I'm going to try and break it down. We had Manchester City, who were very much, right, we've got a game plan, and that's Pep's methodology and style of play, and we're going to stick to that. And he orchestrated that beautifully within the first 20, 30 minutes. And then you've got, on the other side of the spectrum, you've got Jose Mourinho, who very much, I think at that point, didn't really know his best 11, but fielded a side who he thought, I think there's some dubious decisions there as well. The likes of starting Mkhitaryan and Lingard, who hadn't played 90 minutes. I don't know whether he thought Mkhitaryan was a secret kind of weapon in his pocket that now he could launch and show the world that, look, we're going to put a serious dent into Manchester City's season and confidence by smashing them. Sort of coming back to the point around, I don't think Jose at that point knew who his best 11 was, and I think he just fielded a side and thought, well, I know Pep Guardiola is just going to try and keep the ball and do that tiki-taka shit, so what I'll do is I'll just pack the midfield. So he played four at the back, two in that kind of defensive midfield role, three in front of the two holding midfielders, and then Zlatan up front. I would have expected more from Jose. He knew what Pep Guardiola was going to do, and just stuffing the midfield with players, that's not going to work.
Now, you know what? I think the team is still suffering from Van Gaal's regime. One of the few things Van Gaal was actually good at was instilling his, quote marks, philosophy into the players' brains. He said it many times last season that he's really good at that throughout his career. And we can still see that. I mean, recently we've been playing really well, but you can still see, you know, that sort of philosophy kicks in. You know, we start slowing down, we start passing the ball sideways. And you know what? It's going to take time. It really is going to take time. Even during phases of play where we're playing well, all of a sudden we slow down and we, you know, back to Van Gaal days.
I was going to bring that up as well. So when we get the ball, we don't have a game plan. We don't know what we're doing with it. But where the pinnacle of that kind of teamwork comes is when that entire unit has that. We talk about philosophy, but Pep Guardiola's philosophy is shown on the pitch by those players. When they get the ball, they're passing. Yeah, sure, they're passing. Sometimes people think it's all tiki-taka, keep possession of the ball. It's not like that. How I think it works for certainly for Pep is there's a purpose to it. Every pass that they're making, the purpose is to get further in front and advance and get to goal. I think sometimes when LVG got caught out, for him it was about passing possession stats, as he put it. It's possession but with a purpose, and that's what we need. When we get the ball, we should be looking up, looking to prod and poke and get forward, get into the box, create chances. Instead, we try and control the game, slow it down, taking too many touches. Anyway, let's not dwell too much on that. Okay, so when it rains, it pours. That we had the City game, 2-1, heads down. You know, where do we go from here? We fielded our best players, our best team. You know, you count up how much the players are worth on the pitch, and we're looking at astronomical figures. And we still couldn't beat Man City. And with that thought in the back of our mind, we went and performed. You know, this was an opportunity within the Europa Cup to put in a victory, bang in 5-6 goals against Feyenoord, and show not only the United fans what we're capable of, but also the world, to say, look, that was just a minor blip. You know, it was an off day, and we're capable of much more. But what do we get? Abject performance, just out hustled. But again, not going to dwell too much on that. We've got a lot of games within the season to cover. Moving swiftly on to so you had the final game in the kind of back of our minds. We went on to face Watford, and we got exposed. Lost 3-1 in that game. So very much in terms of what I saw from the game, 3-1, was it flattering? Not really. I think the key with the Watford game was defensive errors. Put the Watford game to bed, lost 3-1. Went on within the Europa Cup to face Zorya Luhansk. I hope I pronounced that properly. That game, again, a really sort of drab affair. Rooney was left on the bench. Something that had been coming, I think it was in the waters, we could feel it coming for a little while. Rooney's not been having he's not been having the best of seasons. He was left on the bench. He came on later stages of the game, and he provided what I can only deem as how would you even classify that? He scuffed the ball. It went into the I guess far post where Zlatan was
the old cow.
Waiting like a the goal scoring predator that he is, and as soon as it graced his beautiful forehead, the keeper had already given up. He was picking the ball at the back of the net. He knew Ibra's not going to miss this.
That was so hilarious. I was like, what the hell is he doing? Why is he trying to save me? He was like sat in the goal.
That was hilarious. That put a smile on our faces, but didn't really do much for us in terms of instilling confidence in us. So we talked a little bit about these fixtures, about these games. We didn't cover them too much, primarily because I want to focus on some key questions here. Let's go through first and foremost Pogba. So there's been a lot of talk about, is Pogba really worth it? It makes it easy cannon fodder for opposition fans and football fans, and even us as Manchester United fans, to look at him saying he should be doing something better, shouldn't he? We paid such a hefty price for him. But I think it's unfair to level all the blame on his shoulders. However, let's be honest, he's not been performing the best. And you know what the worst thing is? Now, listen to this. So this is another key insight into the punditry that we get in modern football. Within the first couple of games, when everything was going all right, they described him being all over the... For me, when I see somebody who's all over the pitch, I don't like that. I think as a footballer, an intelligent footballer, you should know your position and you should be able to play it well. With Pogba, when I saw him kind of going, you know, helping out, you know, his fullback and getting dragged too far back, even when we're winning, I don't think that's a good attribute. I want to see him, you know, play his position. So what did the pundit say? The pundit said it's fantastic what he was doing. He just looked like the most talented player on the pitch in a kind of school game, and he was all over the pitch. So that was seen as a positive attribute. When shit hits the fan and we're losing against City, they're calling, you know, they're saying, what is he doing? He's all over the place. Positionally, he's awful. Where's this double standard coming from? Do we think that the criticism leveled by the media is fair? And where is it going wrong for Pogba? A lot of stuff to unpack there for you, Mitchell.
Yeah, you know, we're United, the media spotlight is always on us. You know, when we lose, we get absolutely slated. And like you said, when we win, you know, everyone says we're going to win the quadruple or whatever's available. But yeah, with Pogba, it's even more so. You know what? He just needs time. He needs time to settle in. He needs time to, you know, get used to the league, get used to his teammates. We've got a relatively young team and, you know, we've got a lot of new players in there as well. So it's going to get time. A new manager as well is going to get time, take time for the players to gel, the systems to gel, for Mourinho to get used to everything as well. But, you know, in a couple of recent games, one thing I did notice is that when Pogba's playing, they can't play Fellaini with him. It just does not work. And I really noticed it in, you know, obviously when we played Leicester, it was Herrera and Pogba, and everything was absolutely perfect. But then we played in the Europa League afterwards, I think it was Europa League, and Fellaini was back in the side and everything slowed down. And that's the first time I'd noticed what Fellaini, you know, sort of brings to the team. I just don't understand why Mourinho's starting him.
I think you made a key point there, actually, Mr. Well, I just want to just kind of emphasise that a little bit. So I think when you look at Pogba within Juventus, I think he was certainly an effective member of the team. And for him to be effective, he needs to be partnered with an intelligent footballer. I think at Juventus, he had the likes of Pirlo. You know, that really kind of somebody who can kind of not only control the tempo of the game, but get the best out of Pogba. And being teamed with Fellaini, I don't really see that.
Yeah, like I said, with Fellaini, I just don't understand why he's playing. There may be fixtures during the course of the season where Fellaini will need to play, you know, when we're trying to pack out the midfield, we need that physicality in there. But right now, he doesn't need to play. We've got Morgan Schneiderlin on the bench. I just don't understand. I'm not using him as a scapegoat, which, you know, more often than not, you know, the poor guy is a scapegoat when things go wrong. But he's actually done nothing wrong this season. I think he's played really decent. But, you know, we've got better players sitting on the bench. We've got Herrera on the bench. We've got Carrick on the bench. We've got Schneiderlin on the bench. I don't understand why he's starting.
And Bastian Schweinsteiger sitting with the
exactly.
under-21s. So, yeah.
That's what, you know, it's a bit of a mystery to me. I know he's really good at defending set pieces and whatnot, but, you know, he's good when, you know, later on in the game when, you know, we're trying to defend a lead or something.
Dare I even say, what did you expect from Jose? This is what Jose's all about, you know, having big, physical, brutty, meaty teams in there, players who can, you know, cause a little bit of havoc, throw their elbows about a little
bit.
Yeah, you
know
what,
I don't mind that as long as we win, but I think it's quite evident now. It's quite obvious now, yeah, that he can't play with Pogba. When Herrera came in with Pogba during the Leicester game and the recent game against Stoke, you know, Pogba was absolutely superb. You know, Herrera was releasing, like you said, he had that intelligence. You can look up and see that first time pass, which someone like Fellaini can't do.
Exactly that. I think you're right with the 2 points. One, we're saying Pogba needs time here at Simply Reds, and second, we're saying Pogba needs to be partnered up with the right kind of intelligent football player. Let's move the conversation a little bit on towards what's wrong with the team in general.
I think it's a lot of factors. There's a lot of variables. I think Mourinho, first and foremost, doesn't know his best team yet. I think he still needs to realise that. There's a lot of players that are out. Martial would have been a definite starter. He's just come back from injury. I think that that played a key role in our play. And also, Mkhitaryan's not available yet as well. And I know Mourinho, he is a sort of secret weapon of Mourinho. I think Mourinho would love to be, Mourinho's number 10, if you like. I know Matt has been playing really well in there at the moment. Yeah, but also, there's a lot of players getting used to the system. With Zlatan, I think Zlatan is a key cog in attacking play, and recently he's been dropping off. He's much more of an effective player when he's dropping deep and getting involved. With his age and his sort of lack of pace, he's not the sort of guy that's going to go running behind. So he's more effective when he's coming deep to get the ball and then having runners in behind him, the likes of Rashford and Martial with pace. And we've seen that. We saw that in the game against Leicester. We did it so well, where we're getting in behind. Zlatan was coming deep. He was linking up with Mata. He was linking up with Pogba, and Pogba was running in behind. Rashford was running in behind, and that's where we were cutting our chances. And the same against Stoke as well. I know we didn't win the game in the end, but Lingard played so well, where he just sort of cut inside into those gaps, and that's where we need to focus more on. Again, I'll come back to it again. We're suffering from that Van Gaal, post-Van Gaal effect.
We need to stop dilly-dallying with the ball, moving it about, caressing it, moving it backwards and forwards and recycling it. Let's just be a bit more direct. We've got the players to do it, undoubtedly, and that's exactly what we should be doing. I think one of the other problems is I don't think the formation is working for us. I think against the, whether it was Feyenoord or whether it was the Zorya game within Europa, we played Rashford up front by himself, and he was completely isolated.
Agreed.
Why are we playing two holding midfielders in a Europa Cup game? It doesn't make any sense. I think we should play a more attacking formation. Even Jose's, when he first came to Chelsea and they were playing that beautiful football, weren't they playing like a 4-3-3? So I don't understand where this mentality of playing a five-man midfield comes into play. Okay, fine. I'll let him off for playing that five-man midfield against... it would be a logical thing to do against a team like City. It kind of made sense. It didn't work, but it made sense. But against some of these lesser teams, why are we doing that? So one of the other elements for me, and I'll bring you in on this conversation as well, I think some of the players aren't lifting their weight, and this is the part where I start looking at and pointing fingers. So I absolutely love this player, and last season whenever he got the ball at his feet, I was absolutely drooling. I had my eyes fixated on the television anytime he got the ball. It is in fact Anthony Martial. The money, the fame sort of has been getting to him. I know there's been some off the pitch antics, which we won't discuss because this is about football. But I think he's become a little bit of a playboy, and I think he's going down into the same books as Depay. I think he's going into the same books as Depay, the same kind of trail, the same path that Depay is on as well. I mean, he signed that big money deal, and then, he thinks he's the bee's knees. And instead of being someone like Marcus Rashford, who is very much fixated on, I need to work hard, I still need to prove myself, even though I've made it into the first team, every day he's just working harder and harder to get better as a footballer. And I think with some of these other guys, Martial and Depay, they're just not doing the same. I think the money's got to them. Just your thoughts about the player component in all of this.
I completely agree about Martial. He seemed very jaded, a bit disinterested as well at the start of the season. But I'm going to put that down to his schedule. I mean, he had a long season last season. It was his first season in the Premier League, then he went off to the Euros as well, and he hasn't had much rest. And I'm sort of glad he got injured so he can, really relax and take a break and come back refreshed. And we saw in the recent game against Stoke when he did come on, not only did he score, I thought he looked like his old self. He was running with the ball, he was dribbling, with ease like he did last season. So, although I do agree that he's had a lot of off-the-field problems, he does seem a bit more arrogant than he was this time last season. But I'm going to give him a bit more time. I'm not going to judge him as of yet. But in terms of anyone else in the squad, I haven't seen any signs of player unrest or anything like that. I think they seem very focused. They're all enjoying Mourinho's training methods. They've all come out. Even Memphis has come out and said, he's really enjoying Mourinho's style of play, his training. And I think the vibes are good so far in the squad.
There was also, moving on, I guess, just we've got to cover off some of the other games as well. So you had the relatively easy victory over Northampton. You got the Leicester game as well, where I think we came back with the vengeance. Did you manage to catch any of those?
Yeah, I did. I saw all of them after that. Yeah, the Leicester game was absolutely superb. Like I mentioned, Fellaini wasn't playing. Herrera played in that deep lying playmaker role, and I thought he was absolutely superb. He was the best player on the pitch, in my opinion. He released Pogba, and because of that, Pogba found room. He linked up with Mata was in number 10, The big news from that game was Rooney was dropped.
Many sort of would attribute the Leicester victory to a lack of Wayne Rooney. So I was going to say, is there a kind of any basis for such thoughts? I think the actual Stoke game as well, just looking ahead, because we've got to try and cover that one as well. It was kind of 1-1, but I think the style of football, the performance that we put in, I think, well, it should have been 2-3 nil up in the first couple of minutes. So just taking that into consideration, keeping that at the forefront of our mind, and also that Leicester game where there was a lack of Wayne Rooney within the starting lineup as well, we performed much more kind of, I would say, free-flowing football, and I think Mata was pulling the strings in those couple of games instead of Wayne Rooney having that role. Would you attribute our turnaround in performances, certainly, maybe not results, but turnaround in performances, certainly, to a lack of Wayne Rooney?
No, I wouldn't. First and foremost, it's only been a couple of games, so we're going to need to see long-term how this is affecting us. But with Wayne Rooney throughout his career, everything gets blown out of proportion. When he's playing well, people are talking about him too much. When he's not playing well, it's very similar. And I think it's just simple down to he's not in form at the moment. So he doesn't deserve to be starting. You know, it doesn't matter who the player is, how big profile they are, how much they earn. If you're not playing well, you're going to be on the bench. And that's his case with him right now. He's not playing well. We've got options. We've got Mata, we've got Rashford, we've got Martial, Herrera, Pogba can all play in his position. So, you know, he could take a break.
I like that comment around the fact that if he's not playing well, drop him. I think the reason this whole argument has been blown out of proportion is the fact that we all know Rooney's not in the best of form right now. And despite that, he's been starting. There's talk, is there something in his contract that means that, you know, he has to have a certain minimum amount of game time and all that sort of stuff? So I think you're right. I think the key here is he should be dropped if he's not playing well, and we've got plenty more players to fill his boots. I think Gary Neville was asked a similar sort of comment around what his thoughts on Wayne Rooney were. Do we think this is the end of Wayne Rooney? To be honest, I think he put it best. He said, we all know that with regards to Wayne Rooney's career, he is within the kind of final stages of his career, and it has been a long time coming. We've seen it, his performances, not only for England, deteriorating over the past year or so, I would say. And he said, when Gary Neville was sort of 34, he said he'd played around 600 games. Wayne's, what, around 30, and he's already played sort of 800 games. So it's bound to happen. And now it's just all about, can he see out his career, not in a Gerrard-esque way, but in a kind of more Ryan Giggs type way, whereby, you know, he knows his body's not up to it, but he's willing to contribute to the team as and when is needed. Do we think it's that, or do we think, oh, it's just a rough patch, he's going to find his form back again, and he's got another year or 2 years in him? What do you reckon?
Yeah, you know, it's, like I said, it's been blown out of proportion. He's only 30 years old. He's not in form, but I think he's going to need to accept that, you know, slowly he's not going to start every single game for United now. He's getting older. And the problem with what Rooney's got is he's not a natural, you know, sportsman. His physique is not like Ryan Giggs.
What are you alluding to here?
No, I'm serious. He's not an athlete. Yeah, he's not. He needs to play every single game. I think Ferg used to say that all the time as well.
I don't think it's that. I think it's to a certain extent, I think it's his attitude. And also, we know he loves his football, but he also loves his beer and burgers as well. We've seen him when he's been suspended. Or actually, I think there was one couple of years ago when I think he was not playing in the game. Maybe he had injured himself or something along those lines. He was in one of those VIP boxes, the camera panned to him, and he was cheekily looking over at somebody else's beer, took a swig while the other person wasn't looking. So I don't think the problem here is genetics. I think it's a case of his dietary, and, you know, he wants to
No, what I'm trying to come with that is that I think he's going to struggle more than ever in comparison to players like Ryan Giggs, who was a real athlete, and he looked the same when he was 36 as he was 21.
Yeah, but Ryan Giggs looked after himself. No, I disagree. I think when Ryan Giggs was getting older, you look at his kind of how he managed his career and how he changed his style of football. Ryan Giggs was an intelligent individual in the sense that not only did he change his style of play, Giggs in the latter part of his career started doing things like yoga just to keep fit. Can you imagine Wayne Rooney doing yoga?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both.
Say, well, F off.
I think he is a bit of a lazy guy. He's like that typical, you know, that sort of bricklayer sort of person.
Yeah, that's what it is. He's a bit lazy. He loves his burgers. He's a lad.
Yeah, that's like shit genetics as well.
So hold on a minute, let's just dive into Mushroom's mind a little bit deeper then. Well, I think there's a conversation going on within the scientific community to say, does this thing exist? And that thing is the fat gene. Are we saying there is a fat gene, and that he's got the fat gene?
I think that's what it comes down to.
There we go. That's the headline right there. And then from Simply Red, Wayne Rooney has got the fat gene.
Have you ever seen Rooney take his top off and you think, you know, wow, that's a footballer's physique? He hasn't got it because he's not naturally fit. He's one of us.
He's one of us.
No, I'm just gonna put it down to, you know, Rooney's not finished. He's got plenty of offer to the team, and let's not forget what he's done for the club. There's plenty of more to come. He's just off form. Give him a chance. Leave him alone.
Okay, so finish off with what do you think we should get out of this season?
You know what? I'm just going to say top four. That's a priority for me right now. We're trending slightly behind. I think we're about 4 points behind our predicted points tally right now. But yeah, I think, I mean, looking at the table right now, the top six, you know, not in the correct order, but if you've got City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs and United, that is going to be tough. And all six of those teams are actually looking really good this season.
This point last season, I think the stats show something along the lines of Leicester were sitting, the eventual champions were on 12 points, and it was Manchester United who were 1 point ahead of Manchester City or something along those lines. So despite the fact that at the moment, if you look at the top of the table, you've got the likes of Tottenham and you've got Manchester City up there, we're the ones who are kind of in that Leicester seat at the moment, just to bring a bit of optimism to the season. We could potentially still win it, but you're right, I think we need to get a little bit realistic. I think we got a little bit carried away with ourselves once we signed some of these big players. I think it's more about, you know, let's ground ourselves.
Yeah, I think you know, similar to Mourinho's first season when he returned to Chelsea, when he said they're a little pony this season and the following season we're going to go for the title. And I think exactly so, similar to what we are now with the little pony at the moment.
And we have unfortunately come to the end of the show. I guess we've had a great start to the season, or we did have a great start to the season, but let's be honest, that didn't last long. The honeymoon for Jose is over and now the hard work begins. So let's see where we go from here. Thank you very much, guys, and this has been Simply Reds.